Chapter 8, Explorations. Dune had taken to wandering the pipeworks alone. He would go to his assigned tunnel and do his job quickly. Once you got good at using your wrenches and brushes and tubes of glue, it wasn't hard. Most of the workers did their jobs quickly, then gathered in little groups to play cards or have salamander races, or just talk and sleep. But Dune didn't care about any of that. If he was going to be stuck in the pipeworks, he would at least not waste the time he had. Since the long blackout, everything seemed more urgent than ever. Whenever the lights flickered, he was afraid the ancient generator might be shuddering to a permanent halt. So while the others lounged around, he headed out toward the edges of the pipeworks to see what he could see. "Pay attention," his father had said. And that's what he did. He followed his map when he could, but in some places the map was unclear. There were even tunnels that didn't show up on the map at all. To keep from getting lost, he dropped a trail of things as he walked. Washers, bolts, pieces of wire, whatever he had in his tool belt. And then he picked them up on his way back. His father had been at least a little bit right. There were interesting things in the pipeworks if you paid attention. Already, he had found 3 new crawling creatures. A black beetle the size of a pinhead, a moth with furry wings, and the best of all, a creature with a soft, shiny body and a small, spiral-patterned shell on its back. Just after he found this one, while he was sitting on the floor watching in fascination as the creature crept up his arm, a couple of workers came by and saw him. They burst into laughter.
"It's Bug Boy," one of them said. "He's collecting bugs for his lunch."
Enraged, Dune jumped up and shouted at them. His sudden motion made the creature fall off his arm to the ground, and Dune felt a crunch beneath his foot. The laughing workers didn't notice. They tossed a few more taunts at him and walked on, but Dune knew instantly what he'd done. He lifted his foot and looked at the squashed mess underneath.
"Unintended consequences," he thought miserably.
He was angry at his anger, the way it surged up and took over. He picked the bits of shell and goo off the sole of his boot and thought, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you." In the days that followed, Dune went farther and farther into the pipeworks, holding on to the hope that he might find something not only interesting, but important. But what he found didn't seem important at all. Once he came upon an old pair of pliers that someone had dropped and left behind. Twice he found a coin. He discovered a supply closet that appeared to have been completely forgotten, but all it held were some boxes of plugs and washers and a rusty box containing shriveled bits of what must once have been someone's lunch. He found another supply closet at the far south end of the pipeworks. At least, he assumed that's what it was. It was at the end of a tunnel with a rope strung across it. A sign hanging from the rope said, "Caved in, no entry." Dune entered anyway, ducking under the rope. He found no sign of a cave-in, but there were no lights. He groped his way forward for 20 steps or so, and there the tunnel ended in a securely locked door. He couldn't see it, but he felt it. He retraced his steps, ducked back under the rope again, and walked on. A short distance away, he found a hatch in the ceiling of the tunnel, a square wooden panel that must lead, he thought, up into the storerooms. If he'd had something to stand on, he could have reached it and tried to open it, but it was about a foot above his upstretched hand. Probably it was locked anyhow. He wondered if the builders had used openings like this one during the construction of the city to get more easily from one place to another. On days when his job was near the main tunnel, he sometimes walked along the river after he'd finished working. He stayed away from the east end where the generator was. He didn't want to think about the generator. Instead, he went the other way, toward the place where the river rushed out of the pipeworks. The path grew less level at this end and less smooth. The river here was bordered with clumps of wrinkled rock that seemed to grow out of the ground like fungus. Dune liked to sit on these clumps, running his fingers along the strange creases and crevices that must have been carved somehow by running or dripping water. In some places, there were grooves that looked almost like writing. But as for things of importance, Dune found none. It seemed that the pipeworks was no use after all to a person who wanted to save the city. The generator was hopeless. He would never understand electricity. He used to think he could use electricity to invent a movable light if he studied hard enough. He took apart light bulbs. He took apart the electric outlets on the wall to see how the wires inside wound together, and in the process got a painful vibrating jolt all through his body. But when he tried to wind wires of his own together in exactly the same way, nothing happened. It was what came through the wires that made the light, he finally understood, and he had no idea what that was. Now he could see only two courses of action. He could give up and do nothing, or he could start to work on a different kind of movable light. Dune didn't want to give up. So on his day off, one Thursday, he went to the Ember Library to look up fire. The library occupied an entire building on one side of Bilbao Square. Its door was at the end of a short passage in the middle of the building. Dune went down the passage, pushed open the door, and walked in. No one was there except for the librarian, ancient Edward Pocket, who sat behind his desk, writing something with a tiny pencil clutched in his gnarled hand. The library had two big rooms, one for fiction, which was stories people made up out of their imaginations, and the other for fact, which was information about the real world. The walls of both rooms were lined with shelves, and on most of the shelves were hundreds of packets of pages. Each packet was held together with stout loops of string. The packets leaned against each other at angles and lay in untidy stacks. Some were thick, and some were so slim that only a clip was needed to hold them together. The pages of the oldest packets were yellowed and warped, and their edges were uneven rows of ripples.